This podcast is brought to you by Bill Clinton's Wardrobe, the finest in women's fashion.
Menace to society.
It is August 15th for Patreon subscribers, or it's August 16th for the rest of yous. It is our 20th episode.
Woohoo!
Oh, yeah.
Getting 20 episodes. There. Pretty soon we'll be at 21.
Yeah.
That's next.
Probably next week.
Yeah, it should be. Should be Monday, actually.
That'd be what I thought.
Oh, no, we got it. No, unless you, I guess we don't count the Beyond the Show. We're doing a Beyond the Show this weekend, so.
No, we don't count that.
Yeah it doesn't count.
The episode no. Count.
Doesn't, only one bite. Doesn't count. Only one bite.
Oh, everybody boy. Knows the rules.
So here's what we wanted you to do. We want everyone to submit your top moments or top segments of this show so that when we have our 25th anniversary coming up, we want to drop the top moments of Menace to Society, the show. So submit those online. Submit them on social media, email, website, however you see fit. Also, make sure you check out our merch store. Our show shirts mentioned have been mailed out. All the orders that were placed were mailed out. Of our new awesome hats, and we have our new shirt coming out today.
We got to get that on there. Yeah, season's coming up.
Yeah, just got to make sure it gets there by week two. Because I know LSU fans have hit me up about wanting a shirt for their week two matchup, and you know who else has hit me up a ton is West Virginia fans. Yes. They really want one of the shirts that are coming out soon. And I have a funny story about why it was delayed a little bit and how how the world works.
I wish you could have gotten it out by week zero down in Orlando.
Yeah. Who knows what day was the date today? The 15th. It might be possible. The
24th.
Yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah.
That might be.
Well, you'll
it.
Be there, won't you? You could just bring a few down.
Yeah. I'll bring a couple to town.
Yeah.
But just want to update you. Over 450,000 downloads and listeners. So we're going to hit 500. I'm sure with the growth we have right now, way before the season, which is far beyond what our hopes and goals were. So really excited about that. We actually had our second biggest day ever as far as listenerships and downloads and people that tuned in on Tuesday when episode 19 dropped. So we're really excited because right now it's like it's trending way up. Like I assumed there would be kind of a down, a slight downslope or at least a plateau in this segment of the summer before season, and it's not doing that. We're trending up right now, and we haven't even got to football season yet. So really, really excited about where it's headed and the momentum. Also, the studio is, if anyone's an interior decorator, you could help us out a lot because we have some help, but we certainly aren't decor men. So the studio's done functionality. We just want to make it look pretty. And then once we do, we're going to put a video tour of the new facility, new studio for our Patreon members. Also going to drop a video this weekend for Patreon members. I know it's been a minute since we put out a new video, but I got a great video just about the impact of in college football of one player. It's really cool, and I think you'll really like to see it. I'm also still working through sponsorships and advertising partners, and that platform is still open. So hit us up, menacetosocietypodcast.com, or email us sponsorship@menacetosocietypodcast.com. Also, end of this, probably Monday, either Friday or Monday, we're going to launch or announce our two new shows, the platforms, how to access them. We're working on the parent website right now, so it'll be a one-stop shop to get all three shows. And really going to restructure Patreon and how people can still get the content they want, but it's not going to cost more money. So just that's coming in the next couple days, hopefully. So just want to let you know about that. That's the update. What do we got for sports trivia?
All right, so it is August 15th for Patreon. So on August 15th, 1990, this MLB slugger hit his 30th home run to become the first player in history to hit 30 home runs in his first four seasons. Who was it?
1990, huh?
First four seasons. Wow.
Yep.
That's probably a little early for Ken Griffey Jr., isn't it?
I believe so, yeah. It's not him, so.
Well, I guess you have the answer. So. yeah, I don't know if it's early for him, but it's not him, so pick another one.
Barry Bonds?
Nope.
Ooh, I got Mark McGwire.
There you go.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. I wasn't going to guess that until you said Barry Bonds.
And then for the regular listeners, it is August 16th. And on August 16th, 2003, this world-renowned soccer or football star made his debut.
Football.
It's made with a U.
Made his debut for Manchester United in the English Premier League. Who was it?
David Beckham.
No.
Don't look at me.
He's a little older than that.
Yeah.
He was 18 years old.
18 years old in 2003. That would make him about 34 now, so he's my age. I'm going to go.
Ronaldo.
Yeah, Ronaldo.
Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah,
that's my doppelganger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You wish.
People tell me all the time, you look like Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm like, I know. I get that all the time.
Yep. Now, if only your bank accounts looked the same.
Yeah.
Or if I really did look like him, that would be cool, too.
I'll take both.
Right. There you go. There's a little sports trivia for you. Now, let's get to a little episode recap.
Lots happened.
Manny Diaz is my buddy. Him and I are, I really appreciate him for what he did Monday. We recorded an episode, dive into his week one matchup, really detailed. Tate Martell is his guy. And then 5 hours later, he announces that Tate didn't win the job.
Yeah.
He is a Patreon subscriber and heard the episode. Well, that's what I'm thinking.
I think Tathan, they said, is fighting for a backup job.
Well, yeah. You know what? It's sad because social media just absolutely blistered the kid. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. He bought and paid for that blistering. To sit there and talk trash to Justin Fields about don't swing and miss twice, and then he swung and missed twice. I mean, he brought it on himself, and yeah, that's
100%.
I mean, I get it. He's young, but you know what? At some point, your mommy or daddy has to grab you and say, hey, bro, get off social media and stop tweeting like an asshole. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, people are going to treat you like an asshole. I mean, it is what it is. I don't care if he's 20 years old or if he's 40 years old. That's the reality of the world we live in. You want to pop off on social media and you want to have this false bravado and this confidence about you, and then it doesn't pan out in your favor, you better be ready for some criticism, or just be a good dude on social media. Don't talk trash. And people probably be like, oh man, I feel bad for the kid.
Yep.
Even though people still kind of feel bad for him. But so it'll be, I'm excited to see this kid play. Announced.
Look at Joe Burrow down in LSU.
Yeah. Joe Burrow.
He didn't pop off and say a bunch of stuff. He went down to LSU, took care of business and got a starting job.
Yeah.
That's why Buckeye Nation still loves him.
Yeah. We root for him all the time.
You know what? And I've said this before, and I've been hesitantly critical of Tate's ability to throw the ball, but I will tell you this: he is a really good kid. He really is. He's a very talented kid, and so when we brought him to Ohio State, I used to tell him all the time, like, "Hey, I didn't recruit you to play receiver. I don't want you sitting in my room." Things like that, just joking with him. But in all reality, knowing he's got a future at that position if it doesn't work out at quarterback. If he can't develop as a thrower, he could be a dynamic guy in the slot.
Well, definitely at the next level.
Well, that's what he's never going to be an NFL quarterback. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anyone says. I never projected that. I don't think anyone did. But I think he's a guy that right now is in a position where, all right, second school, second time not being named the starter. At some point, he should say, you know what? I want to play football.
Yeah.
And just move positions. Go play slot. He would be dynamic for Miami in the slot. So he's my new X factor. New X factor for Miami in the Florida game is Tate Martell in the slot, catching some bubble screens, maybe a couple dig routes, a corner. And I'm telling you, with the ball in his hands, he's one of the most dynamic players I've seen. So watch out for him contributing in one way or another, whether it's a special package at quarterback or it's in the slot.
So now Manny Diaz is listening. He's going to put him at running back.
Manny Diaz already mentioned that they are open to doing a Tate Martell package to try to gain yards.
But that's also because Tate cried like a baby and didn't come to practice. And so he's trying to make him feel better to keep the kid on campus. And probably because they see the talent. I mean, they see how talented that kid is. I mean, you can't not. I'm sure he embarrassed their defense several times with his feet.
Well, the one guy that I think he relates to as far as just next level, what he could be, is think about if Braxton Miller moved to the slot as a sophomore in college, how much further along he would be as an NFL receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think if you want my opinion, that's where the kid's future is. That's his home. And he should just, you know what? I know he wanted to be the guy at quarterback, QB1, all that other nonsense, but I think he's a dynamic player, a good kid that should be a relevant name in college football, and so he should just go ahead and make the move and buy into it and just go all in and go become a great slot receiver. That's what he should do. The other thing, so I didn't know that they were going to announce another guy as the starter, but what I was concerned that Tate might not win the job, when he went down there, I was even the one that said, like, hold on now. He's got to become the starter first. Everyone was talking about he was going to be in the, like, Heisman talk, and he was going to be like, bring Miami to dominance. And I was like, time out. Let's make sure he's a starter first. I've said that on an early episode. The one thing that I didn't see in the news, and it's my apologies, is that one of the guys I think is going to be one of the best players at Miami, certainly in his career, but I thought he'd be an impact player this year, was a kid they call Jade, Nesta Silvera, as a D tackle down there. And I didn't realize he hurt his foot last week, and he's out till midseason. So he won't be playing Florida, lucky for you, because he is, I think, a really good player. And I know Larry Johnson agreed. So that's a little...
My prediction looks good.
No. Because Tate's not the quarterback?
I don't know.
Now, maybe Florida can just move the ball better because the D-tackle's out.
You just wanted to say your pick looks good. You have no reasoning behind that right now. You just wanted to say your pick looks good.
Nah, it's getting better as we talk.
Yeah, okay. It's like your Indians projections.
Oh, that's going to happen.
All right, so that's a little episodic recap. Now... We want to continue with what we went to. Hopefully no one at LSU or Texas names some, like, Sam Ellinger got beat out or something. Otherwise, I'm out. I'm done predicting things. We'll just recap games from now on. So week two, I just want to go through the first quarter breakdown of the season, diving into week two. There's really a slew of good games week two. Week one was tough. There was really only two. We didn't really talk about the Auburn-Oregon game, but I think that's going to be an excellent game. Also in week one, I think week two is when you're really going to see some
parity,
and it'll be on display. Like what these teams have done the past 9 months will be on display come around week two. You have obviously the LSU Texas game we're going to dive into right now. We've already talked in detail about Ohio State Cincinnati. I think that's going to be a huge test up in here in the Midwest to see. Can Cincinnati take that next step and pull off a big time upset, or will Justin Fields be ready? Oh, that's the other thing. We're going to have a quarterback announced in Buckeye Nation on Monday.
I can't believe it.
Huge announcement.
I can't believe it.
I know.
So soon.
Yeah. But if it is Justin Fields, God, I don't even want to predict it anymore.
Don't predict it.
If it is Justin Fields, then we'll see. That'll be his first true test after a little Lane Kiffin appetizer week one. We'll see if Luke Fickell can cause problems for old Justin Fields and pull off an upset. Or if Ohio State, that could be a big game to get him ready to go to Lincoln, Nebraska here a couple weeks later. So LSU, Texas is week two. Ohio State, Cincinnati is an upset alert on our board. Another big game on the West Coast. I know a lot of listeners, not a ton out on the West Coast, most Southeast and obviously the Midwest. But Stanford, USC, week two. That's a huge game.
That's an early bit Pac-12 matchup.
Yeah, and I mean, USC. I know people are talking about USC getting fired, and I said Urban's going to be the coach there. But I think USC is going to be really good this year. So I think that's very premature to say the guy's going to get fired. They could go out and win the Pac-12 and make the playoffs, shit, maybe not. But Stanford, I think, is going to be good too. They got a trigger man. They got a quarterback. KJ Costello is really good, one of the best in the country. So that's going to be an awesome game week two. And then A&M Clemson will be cool.
This is Clemson's only game of the year.
It is. Their only ranked opponent for Clemson is week two.
Yep.
And A&M, Kellen Mond, and gets a take on the defending national champs and Trevor Lawrence. So that'll be really cool.
Who's the coach at A&M now? Isn't it
Jimbo?
Jimbo, oh, yeah, it is Jimbo Fisher. That's right.
Jimbo is in Aggieland. That should be a really good week. And I mean, there's some other games we didn't even put on the list that looked like really awesome matchups too. So week two is when week one's going to be fun because it's going to be the first weekend back. UF Miami is going to be awesome. Oregon Auburn is going to be awesome. But just college football being back is going to be exciting.
Most wonderful time of the year.
This is the last weekend without football, without college football.
This one right coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Big time. It is upon us. Well, let's dive into this, man. Analyzing Tom Herman versus Eddie O.
Mumbling Ogeron.
Analyzing Tom Herman versus Eddie O. This is going to be a matchup, man. This is going to be a big, big game. And you'll really see if Texas is going to take that next step as a program under Tom Herman in this game.
Well, they do have it going for him that it's in Austin.
That's a
huge. First things first.
That's definitely a huge advantage.
Yeah.
And it being early in the season.
Yep.
Like, you talk about a fired up team. They both will be, but Texas trying to take that next step. I mean, it's going to be it's going to be a huge matchup. And everyone knows that. That's not breaking news. Breaking news. Texas LSU is going to be a big game. I think, so let's just dive into it. Texas, when Texas is on offense, right, they obviously bring in Sam Ellinger. This is one of the projected to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country this year.
At least top five.
I don't know if he is. We'll see.
Well, I don't remember what you ranked him at.
Well, I think he's got to have a big year to be a top five quarterback. He definitely has the story and possibly the talent. I had him in the top five, so I think he definitely should. And I know Tom Herman is – that's what he's known for, man, developing quarterbacks and really building a system around them to feature their skills, really. And so I think he's poised to be a top five quarterback. Now, I think the only thing that will or could hold him back is their pass protection and offensive line, and then their skill position. I know everyone will crucify me for that. I know they have a 6'6 matchup nightmare in Colin Johnson, and then one of the fastest wide receivers in the Big 12 in Devin Duvernay. I know that. They also have some young talent like Brennan Eagles. They'll look to Brennan Eagles to contribute. Josh Moore. I don't know. Can anyone remember if Brew McCoy ever went back to Texas?
I don't think so, but who knows? He's been back and forth USC, so many times.
USC and Texas.
Back at USC.
USC and Texas were like his divorced parents. Like one day he's at USC, then at Texas, then at USC. So who knows? It might be Texas's parenting weekend when LSU rolls to town. I talk about a bizarre story. So
depends on what they have in the courts, I guess.
Yeah, they might have a custody hearing before the game. So we'll see. But I don't know. I believe he is a Trojan right now, right?
Yes, he is.
I couldn't keep up. I mean, after the third switch, I was like, you know what? I'll just wait for the season to see what uniform he has on. Yep. But they have some young talent, and those two kids coming back, they obviously have to replace. I don't know how good of a receiver he was, but he had the best name in college football.
Oh, yeah.
Lil Jordan. You can't replace Lil Jordan with a guy named Devin and Colin.
Whenever I was watching, I see him and I'd hear him say Lil Jordan. I thought they were just making up a nickname.
Yeah, it's like a rap name.
There's Lil Jordan.
But, I mean, think about it. The swagger in that room right now, it's like last year, like, who are you going to throw to? Man, my guy, Lil Jordan. And now this year, it's like, who are you going to throw to? I'm going to throw to Colin and Devin. Like, no, man. Where's the swagger in the name? I guess Brennan Eagles is a sweet name.
That's solid.
But anyways, outside of names.
That's all that really matters.
Back to football. I think they got a really good skill group. I don't think there's anyone elite that we just mentioned. There's some of those young kids could develop into that. They won't be this year. And so that's concerning a little bit. I think that they'll obviously do some things on offense that will help them, the skill players and the receivers and also Ellinger. The biggest question mark, though, has to be Texas' offensive line. They do return their apex and the captain of the O-line and Zach Shackelford, who could be back healthy by week one, as well as their tackle, Samuel Cosme. But outside of the experience, the inexperience at the other three positions is concerning. But what's most concerning is even the guys returning, they finished 88th in the country in pass block efficiency. And that's... I think that's going to be that's going to be Sam Ellinger's greatest hurdle to overcome is going to be, can he run the protections? Can he flip the protections? Can he pick up blitzes? And can that offensive line develop to protect him? Because this ain't Oklahoma State's front seven coming to town now.
Yeah.
And we're going to dive into it in a minute, but this is a different animal.
Well, and Ellinger is not really that mobile.
No.
So he's not going to break the pocket and get outside and throw it downfield.
No, not that obviously Texas played Georgia last year and beat them. So it's not like I'm saying that they've never faced anyone like this. They certainly have faced a front seven like this, and that's why I think Texas is not like this is going to be a landslide win or they don't have a chance. But this is a very different front seven than they're used to. And so we'll see. Obviously, training camps where that stuff all gets developed. But LSU brings in a top 25 defense from 2018 that's returning 8 starters and looks to be even better this fall. I mean, you're looking at a potentially top 10 national defense rolling into Austin week 2, and it's got to be concerning. If you're being objective, it's got to be concerning. I mean, the front seven making the trip from Baton Rouge should be salty. They lost their best overall player for sure. Buckus Award winner went to the draft, the linebacker Devin White. But they bring back, as long as he comes back, he had knee surgery after the season, but the Fiesta Bowl defensive MVP, Rashard Lawrence, the defensive end, who's, I mean, absolute freak of nature. Yeah. So he's going to obviously look to begin his All-American campaign in Austin. So their front seven is going to be really good, and I think it matches up very well with Texas up front. Their secondary is also poised to be one of the best in the SEC, even after losing our guy.
Greedy.
My guy.
Greedy Williams to the Browns. I think, did he go, was it a transfer portal to the Browns?
Yes. His waiver got approved, by the way.
That was lucky.
What do they call it if you don't jump in the portal to another school? Is there a portal to the draft?
I don't know.
No, it's a path to the draft. It's a path.
Yeah, it's a path.
It's a portal to other colleges, a path to the draft.
It's a yellow brick road.
Yeah, got it. Well, he took the path, not the portal. Nice. And he's in Cleveland now, in the Browns country. But soon to be All-American, Grant Delpit, the safety, is going to be outrageous this year. He should be on every, you know, Biletnikoff. Thorpe Award watch list, led the team in interceptions last year and sacks, believe it or not, from strong safety. He'll be a dominant force. And the duo of Christian Fulton and Kerry Vincent Jr., and also they added one of the best prospects in the country to replace Greedy Williams and Derek Stingley Jr., who's going to be really good. And so they're bringing a solid, solid, salty defense into Austin, and it's going to be a matchup that I don't like Texas in, if I'm going to be honest. All right, let's switch sides of the ball now. Let's go LSU on offense when Texas is on defense. LSU's returning 7 starters on offense. So what is that in total? 15 starters returning, right? Yeah, 8 starters and 7 starters. So 15 starters returning out of 22. That's a veteran team. That's an experienced team. So 7 starters on offense, including the man, the myth, the legend, Joe Burrow.
Yeah, buddy. Jose Burrose.
I was waiting for that one.
My guy.
Joseph Burrow is returning. And I love Joe Burrow.
Me too.
I loved him at Ohio State. So a lot of people have asked questions about, did he have a fair chance at Ohio State? I don't think we've ever talked about it on a Beyond the Show or anything.
No.
I think legit everything that was in the media was legitimate. I mean, it was people thought Dwayne would be the guy, but he hadn't done anything to win it yet, and Joe did enough to show that he could be the guy.
To keep pace.
And so it was one of those where, like, wow. Like, I mean, either way, we're going to be good. And it was going to be, I guess, an unfortunate situation for one of the two. And the problem was we didn't know which one coming out of that spring. And then obviously Joe made the decision to leave, which I think was really excellent for everybody. I mean, Joe's now the starting quarterback at LSU, just out there balling out. And then Dwayne obviously did what he did. Now he's with the Redskins. So, but I'm so excited to watch Joe this year. I think
Joe had a bunch of big wins.
A bunch of big wins.
His first year.
A bunch of big wins. I mean, shoot, he beat Georgia.
Georgia,
right?
Auburn.
Well, he gives LSU something they haven't had since Jamarcus Russell, really. A quarterback that can throw the ball.
Yeah. And I mean, I think he really had just a good year last year. Not a great year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's poised to have a really good year this year. We'll see how good. And I know the biggest thing in the SEC, one of the biggest things, not the biggest thing, but a huge storyline here is that LSU was able to lure away Joe Brady from the Saints. He's a pass game coordinator, and I know they're implementing, it's been well documented, implementing a more Burrow-friendly pass game, basically. A lot of RPOs, pass game that's much better suited for him and his experience. I mean, things that he's used to that we did at Ohio State, that he did even before Ohio State back in high school, and things that's kind of in his wheelhouse, because he was kind of a fish out of water in that LSU offense last year. He still performed well, and I mean, played in a number of games where he played well. But this offense is going to be poised to really let him shine and let his strength show, his skill set show.
Especially with 1 year under his belt for the experience and everything. Oh. I think he'll just flourish.
When you go from not really starting or playing at Ohio State or anywhere, and then all of a sudden you're jolted into the SEC West at LSU, like Death Valley. And I mean, you talk about there's going to be a growing period there. And so I know this offseason, I'm sure he just was on fire getting ready for this year because he knew what to expect now. But outside of that, I mean, I'm telling you what, they have four or five starters coming back on the O-line, as well as their sixth O-lineman. Their next best O-lineman is obviously sliding into that fifth spot. So their front should be one of the best in the country. I mean, they're bringing back an offensive line, and LSU's always had a solid offensive line. But especially now it's experienced, is going to be really, really cool to see how that develops. You talk about a quarterback's best friend, give him some guys to throw to and protect him and watch out if he's talented. And Joe is that. The only thing I will say about LSU, and this is kind of a historical LSU point, is that their offensive skill is very LSU-esque, a la the team that had OBJ and Jarvis Landry on the field together and still only managed to finish 46th in the country in passing offense. Right. It's like they're known for it. They always have these freaky receivers, and it's like, yeah, they don't do a whole lot, though.
Well, and I mean, now they have a quarterback that can throw to them.
So that's a fact. It might be a fact.
A little different.
But and OBJ and Jarvis Landry both had over 1,000 yards. I think it was the only 2,000 yards they had throwing the ball, though, maybe.
They got another 1,000 from, like, 10 other guys.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But I will say they do return their top four receivers, led by junior Justin Jefferson, who had, like, 875 yards last year. So he looks to become a 1,000-yard receiver, probably one of the first ones in a while at LSU. He only had six tugs last year, so you'd like to score a little more out of your best receiver. But moral story is they're talented and inexperienced, and I think this pass game, this transition on offensive scheme is really going to help them produce on the field. The running back position is going to be in line with LSU's historically effective run game. They got a kid coming back in Claude Edwards-Helaire, and he's taking over for that kid, Nick Brissett, that was really good last year, 1,000-yard back. But they also have the one that I'm excited about is the nation's number two running back prospect coming in is John Emery Jr. He looks to be the next great back to wear the purple and gold. I mean, in line with the Leonard Fournettes of the world. So it'll be interesting to see how early he gets on the field. Does he take over that job or does he just supplement kind of a 1-2 punch? It'll be interesting to see, but I know this, with that offensive line up front, they're going to run the ball because they're always talented in the backfield. And with a line that can block like that, it's going to be really, really exciting to see. And now, switching to the other side of the ball, Texas actually should be decent on defense. They're going to rely on what is probably going to be the best secondary in the Big 12. That's like
big time then, huh?
It's like being like the best kid on the C team in travel baseball. It's like, wow, you're the best of the worst. But no, I mean, they're only returning two starters in the secondary. Their safety, Brandon Jones, if he's healthy, he had ankle surgery, I know. And they also had a 2018 freshman All-American, Caden Stearns. So their safety position looks solid. Their corners are going to have to obviously develop and see how the last 9 months have went for them. But they also have a little experience on the D-line. The front seven is a huge question mark for Texas, though. I mean, seven new faces on a defense that finished 67th in the country in total defense and 110th in America in pass defense because, well, Big 12. it's all it is a question mark. It's not saying they're not going to be great on defense. It's just major concern when you have seven new faces on a defense that was very below average. Todd Orlando's got to do a hell of a job both in scheme and developing those players because I think their secondary is going to be decent. I think that they're, I mean, how decent can it be? You're returning two guys from 110th best pass defense in the country, but
that could be a good thing.
Well, I mean,
if they're that bad,
only one, rid of the bad guys. Only one way to go from there.
Exactly.
Up. But overall analysis, if you're asking my opinion, I think Texas definitely gets the nod when it comes to coaching. Because I think Tom Herman is a great football coach, and I've said that 20 times. I'll say it 21. He's a great football coach. He'll have that team playing well. He'll have them overachieve, but that's what it'll be, overachieving. And outside of that, I think LSU has every advantage at pretty much every matchup. I can't find one that I like Texas in. Texas is going to struggle protecting Sam Ehlinger and blocking the LSU front seven, and every facet of the game is going to be hard. Give them a hard time. Outside of some jump ball advantages with the monster, Colin Johnson, LSU should be able to cover the skill in Austin. I mean, they have the secondary to do it. I think Devin Duvernay can really run. Outside of that, they don't have like some flat burners, but LSU secondary are going to be able to run with anyone in the country. So I think they'll be able to cover them. I would be worried if I'm Texas about, all right, if you have here's what happens. You're facing a secondary that can cover. You need a little extra time to let that receiver work to get open. I don't think Texas provides Sam Ellinger that little bit of extra time that they need for those receivers to have a chance to get open against LSU secondary. Simple as that. This is probably the best LSU team top to bottom that we've seen in Baton Rouge in years. And probably their best chance that they have to unseat Alabama in the SEC West.
I was going
to
say the same thing.
Yeah, and I mean, Tom Herman has turned Texas around, don't get me wrong, but I don't think they're ready for this matchup yet. Mm-hmm. I think they're a year, maybe two away from beating an Alabama on a national stage. I'm not talking about beating a Georgia team that didn't make the playoffs. I'm talking about beating a team in a premier primetime matchup. They have a star in the making, a quarterback for sure. But they don't have the defense and the skill to go out and beat a team as talented, productive, and experienced as the Tigers of Baton Rouge bring to town on September 7th.
Well, when you look at it, Texas has 10 total returning starters of 22, and LSU returns 15. I think the experience is a big difference in this game.
Yeah, for sure. And you also have to look at how productive were those guys. Sometimes people get caught up in that. Oh, they're bringing back 8 guys on defense. You're like, yeah, but the defense sucked.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, man. You brought back a shitty defense. Like, what are you doing to make it better? And that's, people get caught up in so many stats. And I agree with you. I agree with that point. Because in this, but sometimes that's just a complete caveat. Like, okay. It's like you brought back the worst quarterback in college football. Are you excited about that? Yeah. But fortunately, these two teams have really, it's going to be two really good quarterbacks, two really good teams, really.
Score prediction?
My score prediction, LSU 35, Texas 21. I could see it being a little closer, maybe 35-28 with a little home field advantage. But I think LSU is going to be able to score. And I think that they'll also be able to, Tom Herman's always going to score, first of all. He's going to put up points. I think this LSU team is a team that should hold this Texas team to about 10 points. I think that the Tom Herman effect will give them will double that. They'll go 21 points. My prediction is LSU 35, Texas 21, and the stadium's filled with Tom Herman t-shirts. That's my prediction.
In Austin?
It's at Texas.
Well, I know. The LSU fans.
Oh, they travel well.
Yeah, you never know. Or the Texas fans might think it's funny. Who knows?
Yeah, it is funny.
They probably won't. I know Texas didn't think it was funny. So funny story about that, getting a little off topic. This is obviously for Patreon members. This will be news to you. For everyone else, I'll probably release this before this show drops. But so we obviously teased the Tom Herman shirts that are coming out, which are coming out, by the way. After we did so, the University of Texas had a law firm send a cease and desist order to me. So let me explain to you something about how legal stuff works. Let me tell you what a cease and desist order is. It's like a fancy toilet paper. You literally can take it, wipe your ass with it, and throw it away because it means nothing. They're just basically, it's like a
scare tactic.
Well, it's like talking trash. It's like, I will punch you in the face. And then if you keep talking, they're like, well, I warned you. And then they punch you in the face. Or they don't. They were just talking. Mm-hmm. So they sent me a cease and desist order talking about ESPN did a documentary on Horns Down. It's like, okay.
Sweet.
Cool, man. ESPN did a story on Bo Jackson one time. Am I allowed to say his name? Like, what are you talking about? So they sent a cease and desist order. So my response will go out today to them, and it will be a nice letter.
It's kind of like Ohio State trying to trademark the word the.
Right. It's like, I'm sorry, you can't, just because a guy, there's a t-shirt with a devil down. What are you talking about? You don't own that.
Exactly.
So the shirts are getting released, Texas. Mr. Del Conte. They will be getting released because of your head coach, and the country really wants them too. I'm sorry. I guess that's what happens when you hire a guy like that. So we will be releasing those t-shirts. I will be sending my response, Texas, today, because no cease and desist order is going to like scare me, and I welcome a lawsuit readily. I can't wait. Please sue me. So anyways, the shirts are coming today or tomorrow. They'll drop. I just had to tell that quick story because when I got it, I was like, oh man, you know, you're onto something when a university the size of Texas sends a cease and desist order to a little old podcast.
Right.
The little old podcast, right, Dabo?
Yep.
So we got that coming.
Well, I wanted to say my score prediction.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. What's your score prediction?
A little bit closer. I'm thinking LSU still wins, but 34-28.
Mm-hmm.
Just 6 points.
I'm going 24-3.
Yeah.
Texas? Ooh.
Yeah, LSU.
LSU.
Sorry.
I said Texas and you said yeah.
Yeah, I meant LSU.
You meant no.
I think
I get it. They're confusing. They're almost the same word.
I think LSU's defense just overpowers the offensive line, and Sam Ellinger has a real problem moving the ball and probably forces some turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so excited for it to start, man.
I know. I can't wait.
This is all cool, and I think it's all valid and great conversation, but I'm just excited to watch them play.
We'll probably change all of our opinions after the week one.
I don't know about that. Week one, not all of them, a bunch of cupcakes. About week four, though, there'll be some opinions changing. But these games are going to set the table for that, so I'm excited about it. That's our week two game of the week preview, so make sure you check it out. Next episode, we'll dive into week three and talk about the best matchup we see in the country in week three. All right, the one team I want to just at least mention and talk about briefly because they became relevant last year and not became relevant. They've always been relevant, but they've always been overrated if you ask me, at least in the last 10, 15 years. And they finally made it back to the playoffs. Obviously got embarrassed in the playoffs by Clemson, but Notre Dame, how are they going to react? I know that this is the first time they've had back-to-back double-digit wins since Lou Holtz, right? You had mentioned that.
Yeah. Brian Kelly coming back. You know, he's been up and down a lot at Notre Dame. He succeeded. Like, obviously, he made it to the BCS national title game a few years back, got embarrassed. Made it to the Fiesta Bowl a couple years later, got embarrassed. Made it to the college football playoff, got embarrassed.
Yeah, so the question is, what are they going to do this year, right? I mean, I look at their schedule, and there's a lot of games that make me nervous. I mean, to say they're going to make it back to the playoff or have a 10-11 win season, I mean, they got to go to Georgia, to Michigan, to Stanford. And honestly, going to Duke's not a cupcake. Those are four away games. The three of the four are really tough.
Yeah, and then they also have USC and Virginia Tech on the schedule.
Yeah, at home. So people have asked my thoughts on Notre Dame as a team. I mean, I know they return a lot on offense. I think their offensive line is outstanding. I mean, two of the guys, Tommy Kramer and Liam Eichenberg, we recruited as hard as we've ever recruited anyone, and they're studs. So I know their offensive line is going to be legitimate. I really like their tight end. I think their skill is very average. Having recruited against – I've honestly didn't recruit against Notre Dame ever, but that's – not for any reason. I'm not even a knock on Notre Dame, but I never, when I recruited the top receivers in the country, it was never us and Notre Dame. So I'm worried about their skill, to be honest with you. And I think their quarterback's really average.
Yeah, Ian Book, you know, he came in last year. He played a couple years ago in a few games when Wimbush was hurt. Came in last year against Vanderbilt and took over the starting position. What I've heard about him and what I've read about him is he's a very game manager type where he doesn't take a lot of risks.
Yeah, he would be an excellent quarterback if they were loaded on offense.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, honest to God, if you put him in Ohio State's offense, he would probably be phenomenal because they just have so much talent around him that he can just manage the game, kind of JT Barrett-esque. Just manage the game, get the ball where it needs to go, be a good leader, and get the job done. But I don't see that on their roster. I look at their roster and look at their production, and it's like, who are those guys that are going to, if he's not the one that's going to go win the game, who's going to go win the game?
Well, exactly. They have a bunch of, a slew of wide receivers that are going to try to replace their go-to wide receiver, Miles Boykin.
Yeah, and I like Miles Boykin out of high school and in college. When I watched his college film, I liked him. I thought he was a really good player, but he's one of the few that I've ever even... that I ever offered or looked at.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked at pretty much all of them, but he's the only one I think I offered on the list, looking through it. And Brandon Wimbush was the most shocking thing to me because he was our top quarterback recruit that class, or one of them at least. And he obviously didn't pan out and kind of got beat out by the Ian Book. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes for them. I mean, I know they also have six returning starters on defense. Their secondary looks to be the strongest part, right?
Yeah, their secondary, their safeties are strong. They returned Jalen Elliott, and they got a transfer from Navy named Alohi Gilman. Yeah. Alohi Gilman. So that they look to be one of the best, it could be one of the best duos in the country. But they did lose Julian Love to the NFL. And so filling that other cornerback position is a concern. They don't really have much depth at corner. Their pass rush looks to be solid, but their D tackles and linebackers are not a lot of depth and very inexperienced.
Yeah, that's what I see. So I think I don't think this is a huge letdown season for Notre Dame. I think that's definitely a four loss season for Notre Dame. So I guess if you're a Notre Dame fan, maybe that's a huge letdown. It's definitely a three loss season for them. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they stand it. I don't think they go into Georgia and win. I don't think they go into Michigan and win, to be honest with you. And then I think they drop one other game, be it USC, Virginia Tech, at Duke, at Stanford. I wouldn't put it past Boston College to beat them week 11.
Yeah. When I looked at it, I had them at 9-3. Just
yeah, but you're also a domer.
I have a little bit of bias, maybe.
Yeah, so you're out.
But I guess my question to you, as a Notre Dame fan in the past and kind of still, is Brian Kelly. He to me is a very average coach. It seems like he wins a lot of games, but like he's only won 63% of his games at Notre Dame, 71% as a head coach. Obviously, the three big-time national stage bowl losses don't help my opinion. And then you look at the recruiting in the past 4 years, and he hasn't landed a five-star recruit in 4 years at Notre Dame. I mean, what are your thoughts on him?
I think he's a good football coach. I think I don't think he's of the elites. I don't think you put him in the category with the guys we talked about last, and we've never brought him up. I've never brought him up when we talk about elite head coaches, and even the ones that I think are labeled elite that maybe are just really good. But I also think he almost got fired there for a minute and had to replace a lot of guys on his staff. He had to do not a complete overhaul, but he really had to make some changes to save his job. And they were good changes. I think they brought he also lost some good coaches, but I'm on the fence with him. I mean, I think he's a really good coach. I think Notre Dame could do much better. If Notre Dame ever wants to get back in the national conversation with the teams like Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, they need to do something different on the recruiting trail, because I never felt Notre Dame ever. Now, we felt Notre Dame in Ohio and some Midwest kids, but you can't just recruit Midwest kids and then all of a sudden think you're going to go beat Alabama. Not with just them. You need to recruit nationally the best players, and I don't see Notre Dame doing that.
Yeah, I mean, over the past probably 4 or 5 years, they've had top 15 classes in recruiting, two top 10, but right there at number 10. Their 2020 class does look to be an improvement in their recruiting, currently sitting at number 8 with 2 5-star commits. So hopefully their recruiting is getting a little better. I'm just worried last time they had a big letdown after a solid season at going 4-8. And so
yeah, I don't
if
see
another
that
season like that happens, I don't know what you do at Notre Dame. How do you fire a guy that just went to the playoff 2 years ago? But
I mean,
if Urban Meyer's in the mix, that's how.
Oh, yeah, right. it's we'll see. We'll see what how they do. I think Notre Dame is inflated on a national stage as far as their impact in college football. I think they have been for 10 years. I get it. I've never been a Notre Dame fan, so you can hold that against me if you want. But they every time they're supposed to be really good, they play the hardest schedule ever in the history of the world. They go out and just absolutely shit their pants against somebody good, a la Alabama in 2012, a la Clemson last year, a la anyone they ever play in a bowl game that's worth a shit. They absolutely piss their pants. And so I'm waiting for that Notre Dame team where I'm like, oh man, Notre Dame's back. Like Notre Dame's, I guess, back from when? 90s? Mid 90s?
Yeah, 80s. I mean, really. Yeah. 90s weren't even that great.
But. Yeah, so back Lou Holtz days, 88.
Yeah, I mean, Lou Holtz was the last one to really do it. They've had some success with a couple coaches, you know, 1 year here and there, but never on a national stage like this.
Yeah, so we could go into the dynamics and what I've heard from people that have worked there about the politics and inner workings of the academic side of Notre Dame's, the diocese and fathers that are in charge of academics and in charge of this, and just that dynamic at Notre Dame is very different. I know they also have some race issues at Notre Dame that are very concerning. So, and it's also not a great place, South Bend, Indiana. Who wants to go there?
Yeah,
one of the biggest downfalls of Notre Dame and places like that is the whole tradition and gold dome and touchdown Jesus. Like, it's all really cool, but it's not that cool to an 18-year-old who doesn't know anything about that.
No, and I mean, I go to Notre Dame maybe once every other year, and when you go, I tell everybody it is one of the coolest experiences of your life because it's so different than everywhere else I've ever been in college football. But it's not fun. Like, it's not a fun place to live. It's not where you want to be if you're 18, 19 years old. The city it's in is run down. It's old. There's not a whole lot to do. I will say that the one thing they do to try to help recruiting is they continuously build these mammoth athletic complexes. They just built a new one this year.
Yeah, they're a dime a dozen now. I mean, nationally recruiting, you have to do that, but it's not going to get you a kid. Now, if you have a shitty facility, you might lose a kid. But just because you have a great one, you're not going to get a kid. Because have you seen Alabama's? Clemson's? Holy.
Yeah,
holy
Clemson's
shit.
Ridiculous.
I mean, Ohio State just did a full revamp and a bunch of additions. I mean, everyone's doing that. So you have facilities is like, you got to keep up with the Joneses. You got to do it or else you look bad, but it's not going to help you win a kid. It's just going to help you not lose them. So I don't know. I think they got a lot to do with Notre Dame to get it back to a relevant. Like, if you want Notre Dame to become Alabama, if you're a Notre Dame fan, you got a lot of political work to do within the structure of your university if you want that to happen. And you got to find a draw. You got to start recruiting nationally because they used to. But they also used to recruit a kid with a twinkle in his eye that his daddy told him Notre Dame is one of the best programs ever. And that's not the kid you're recruiting nowadays. It's just not. So I'll be interested to see how they do this year. I don't think they have a complete egg laying like a 4-8 season, but I see four losses in their regular season, and then obviously any bowl game is a whole nother conversation. I want to thank you for tuning in again. Let me tell you the only thing that's died down. Our listeners, our viewers, or whatever you want to call them, our audience has grown steadily, and it's actually started to grow exponentially the last 2 weeks. So that's growing. I mean, beyond our goals. What I need is some more feedback. I want to hear more on social media, what you like, what you don't like. I'm a huge believer in constructive criticism. You could say, Zach, you are an idiot. I'm great. Tell me why. I believe you. I kind of am sometimes. Just tell me why. Because I want this to keep improving, keep growing, because I think it could be something very different. And that's what it's always been designed. That was always the plan. And I think it's becoming that, but we need your help to do that. So again, thanks for tuning in. Just previewing next episode, and we've been talking about a couple of these things. So next Thursday, episode 22, we're going to drop the fantasy football draft guide. It's going to be a good 20-minute segment breaking down our opinion of where these guys in the NFL are going to who are going to be the most productive for fantasy football, because I know drafts are coming up. I know ours is coming up. We're trying to work out a fantasy football league for our audience, but there's just a lot of you. I mean, I want to do it, and I'm going to try to find a way to do it, but I got a feeling that we'd have to like create our own fantasy football venue to do it. So we'll see. I'm going to work on that. And then obviously going to continue with our breaking down the top games in college football. I know week three, there's a couple games on the docket. Oklahoma plays UCLA, I think. Florida plays Kentucky. And there's a couple other games that we want to look at. So we will break one of those down. And then also, we're going to dive into our top 10, the Menace to Society top 10. Because and you know what else we need to do? I want to download everyone's top 10. And then at the end of the year, see who was like most right. Because that's what happens. You name a top 10, and then 10 weeks later, it's like no one cares what you named. It's all bullshit. But we're going to definitely preview or get into that. And then also want to go conference by conference, talk about the politics of conference scheduling and who the playoff hopefuls are out of each conference. And so that's where we're going with. Again, appreciate you listening. If you could go on and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Just got added to Stitcher the other day. A couple people asked me to do that, so I got our feed on Stitcher. Working on iHeartRadio now. That's our next step to get kind of help the show grow. And then after you subscribe, make sure you rate us 5 stars, please. And then hit us up, menacesocietypodcast.com. Check out our storefront with our shirts and hats. Again, our Tom Herman shirt dropping hopefully today, maybe tomorrow. And then if you're interested in advertising sponsorship, reach out at menacesocietypodcast.com. Hope you liked the show. Hope you were entertained, educated, learned something, enjoyed it, mowed your grass to something different. I hope it was fun. And if you didn't like it, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Menace to society.